So what we're here to talk about today is a novel coronavirus. What do we know so far?
Well, you know, the coronaviruses as a family have been around for a very long time. It's estimated that up to a third of cases of upper respiratory infections in adults are due to coronaviruses. But historically, they've really only caused mild illness, so there hasn't really been a big focus on them until 2002, when we had this outbreak of SARS. And what distinguished SARS from prior coronaviruses was that it appeared to be what we call more virulent, more disease-producing. And for those infected, there was a mortality or death rate of about 10%. And these were mostly atypical pneumonias, although it appeared that people also had some GI symptoms. So now all of a sudden, it was more of an issue for human health. And we learned a lot. You know, when that outbreak began, we didn't know what the cause was, but very quickly energizing the global community, emphasizing the global nature of infectious disease, we were able to identify this new coronavirus, the SARS coronaviruses. Now, there are four human ones, but I'll fast forward to 2012, where another coronavirus of the family, the MERS, because it was identified as a respiratory syndrome in the Middle East, mostly in Saudi Arabia, was identified, and that as didn't spread as actively, but more hospital-associated infections, but also pretty severe infections came about, and now this new one. They're all cousins. So, you know, the thing to know about coronaviruses is they really are zoonotic pathogens. There is a clear-cut animal-to-human migration of these viruses, and it's clear that they have a very diverse reservoir in animals and are able to mutate, recombine, and develop new forms of a very similar family. Okay? So, what we've learned from the prior outbreaks is that although we know it started in a live animal market in Wuhan City, in Hubei province, we now think, like prior outbreaks, that bats probably played a major role. Bats are really pretty exquisite animals. They harbor a lot of viruses, and what's unique about them is they seem to be resistant. So they don't have symptoms, but they can transmit as vectors, and that might be one of the reservoirs we need to focus on.
So a lot of people wonder if this virus is reasonably mild with just a 2% mortality rate, if the response from the World Health Organization, the CDC, the military, with the quarantine at Lackland Air Force Base, if the response is outsized. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Okay, we have a challenge in global infectious diseases threats in general. In general, we're a reactive rather than proactive community. It's not like we have stockpiled vaccines for all of this and we can get a handle on it before it occurs. This is really something that requires a political will, global input, and resources. In this case, like most, my understanding is there were cases cropping up in December. And the uptake is usually slower than we want because there may already be transmission occurring before it becomes a real public event. But I have to say that in this case, China, I think, came to the table in telling us about this virus more quickly. And of course, we knew it was a virus and we could sequence it and we could move much quicker than we did with SARS. But by the time it really started becoming an internationally known phenomenon, we already had transmission occurring. And that is the challenge of global infectious threats that know no borders. But I think China's response was good. I think the global response has been good. The WHO came in. Actually, WHO declared coronaviruses as something to focus on back in 2017. And of course, the U.S. responded now. We have 28 countries, I think, involved in this viral outbreak today. I think the response is as good as it can be. I'd like to think about a future where we're more primed for this and are more proactive, but this is the challenge we face going forward.
But does it seem to be an overreaction to evacuate around 1,000 people from China who have no evidence of illness and then quarantine them on a military base for 14 days?
Yeah. It does sound rather severe, but I think given the rapidity of the outbreak, measures like this occur. I don't think it's completely unreasonable. I know right now it's anyone from mainland China in the last 14 days is going to be at least quarantined and symptom checked before they go out into the public. Because we don't know the extent of its transmissibility human to human and this issue about virulence, I think there is a bit of an overreaction. It does appear to be severe, but I think the global community is rising to this occasion more quickly, having learned from previous outbreaks. I mean, if things change, and we haven't done some of this reactive force, if you will, then we'll be questioning that as well.
Is that the concern, if things change?
Always that possibility, yes. With the current outbreak and still discovering how this virus is transmitted, viruses, as opposed to some other bugs, can mutate pretty quickly. And now that it's human to human, could it further mutate? It's a possibility. We don't know the answer to that.
This coronavirus has infected more people already than SARS did throughout its lifespan during the outbreak of 2003.
True. I think the current global known infected caseload is about 25,000, and we don't know who else because there's probably a bunch of asymptomatic cases, and there's nearly 500 deaths in mainland China. I think there were about 350 during the SARS outbreak, so in mainland China. So, you know, this is still on the rise. We do have a diagnostic test. Again, that's really a plus for us thinking about global health threats. So that DNA test is being employed. I'm also encouraged by the fact that there is activity on the vaccine front. And because the current virus is related to previous viruses, it's possible that we can develop a vaccine more quickly, and we can also employ potential antiviral drugs that we've used for other coronavirus outbreaks, and possibly they'll be effective.
Does the number of people infected in a relatively short period of time tell us that this is more transmissible than SARS?
Possibly. I can't say for sure, but possibly.
So do we have any for sure's about how it's transmitted at this point? We know droplets. You touched on a fecal transmission.
That's what I know. As I read about this, mm-hmm. like all other experts in the area, that's the extent of my knowledge today. And I think that epidemiologists will continue to use refined modeling techniques to try to figure out just how transmissible it is. And again, there's transmissibility and then there's disease producing. So you can have a virus that's more easily transmitted, but not necessarily causing as many human deaths.
That brings me to my next question, which was, even if it is what appears to be a mild illness in most cases, and only 2% mortality, if you have many thousands of people infected, that mortality number can get pretty high pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a numbers game. And that's why we have to get on top of this and have to take measures to screen like we're doing at major airports and be vigilant of this. Now, what complicates this outbreak is we're in influenza season. And, I want to make sure during this interview I make the comment that it's critical that you get vaccinated for influenza. It's not too late, but the symptoms for respiratory infection overlap. So index of suspicion by clinicians is critical, proper testing, and then if needed, isolation is necessary here.
So as an expert in infectious diseases and epidemiologist, what can we expect to see next?
I think this outbreak will continue. It doesn't seem like it's slowed. I think more countries will be involved. I think there are 11 confirmed, diagnostically confirmed cases in the U.S. That number will probably go up. We may unfortunately see a death in this country. And I think that as a result, this virus will be yet another one now that's more endemic throughout the world. And hopefully we'll have more knowledge about treatment and potentially vaccines for these viruses as these coronaviruses continue to cause havoc. But I'm always concerned about the next virus. And it's not if, but when. And this issue about reactive, not trying to get behind the eight ball when we're handling these global outbreaks.
I think throughout world history of epidemics and pandemics, we've learned that panic is the enemy of getting anything like that under control. However, when people hear that a virus is reasonably mild with just a 2% mortality rate versus 10% for SARS or 50% for Ebola, and then, you know, WHO declares a global health threat, they go, well, what am I missing here? Should I panic? Because you say it's not a big deal, but WHO and CDC say it's a big deal. So what do we do about that when it relates to panic?
I think that questions get asked during these kind of outbreak periods. I don't think there's any reason for panic. It's a global health emergency given the magnitude of the outbreak, but I would repeat there's no imminent threat to U.S. Individuals. At this point, caseload is very low, so there's not a reason to not leave your house and to be concerned at that level. I just think it's important for people to understand that we live in a world where these infectious agents exist, that these outbreaks occur, and that we just need to appropriately respond and work very hard from the perspective of science to continue to improve our diagnostic tests, our therapies and vaccines, so we can rapidly manage patients who happen to be ill with these organisms. I think you seek advice from your clinician about the imminent threat or public health officials, but it's really important to understand that we just need to learn more. We do not need to panic.
So you're comfortable with 250 people flying in from China and living here in San Antonio at Lackland?
We are a global society in which people come and go from the United States. Infectious agents know no borders. I don't think the answer is simply to worry about who enters the U.S. That's a bit naive, in my opinion. Instead, we need to recognize that we need to be communicating across borders effectively. I think this recent outbreak does show that. There's been a lot of communication on these outbreaks. And I think that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. I think we are paying attention to anyone who's been in an immediate area in mainland China, in the province, and instituting quarantine seems appropriate for people who are at the high-risk areas. The point is, we have these outbreaks, and it is critical that we think about a strategy that allows us to most effectively and efficiently identify these threats, contain these threats, and ultimately develop effective vaccines to prevent infection from occurring. We can never have a sterile world, but we can keep working very hard at this. The National Institutes of Health, the CDC, WHO, all very active, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There are a number of people who understand the importance of these global infectious disease threats.